We're off and running with Baseball America Hot Sheet, Scotty Braun, J.J. Cooper, Carlos Collazo, Ben Badler. We got a full stacked roster today. And also, of course, always a reminder, please go get yourself a Baseball America subscription. If you're watching this show, listening to this show, it probably means if you don't have one, you should, because there's a lot more than what we just talk about in 20 to 30 minutes each week. But let's dive right into some draft signings with the first move. We should start at the top, J.J. Cooper, but let's run through who has signed so far and what it means.
So we are seeing a slew of signings already. And the thing that's, you know, we've seen the top two picks already signed. We've seen three of the top five. We've seen almost 300 players sign overall. But the key thing about all of this is you see how draft strategies kind of filtered out. And kind of kicking it to our experts here, kind of like Carlos, like when you see, what Tyler Bremner signs for with the Angels or what Eli Willett signs for with the Nationals, we kind of knew that whoever went at the top of this class was not going to get full slot. But very much what both teams did there, it seems like, is they created the room to do a whole lot more later on in the draft. And in the Angels case, it looks like they've already kind of locked up most of that already, because, you know, they were able to get their top picks signed for well under slot.
Right. That's why it's hard to judge a draft immediately after the fact, because so much of it just comes down to who else are they signing in the class? What are the actual deals going to be? And you see with Washington, I mean, they saved nearly $3 million by signing Eli Willett to an $8.2 million bonus at the first overall pick. Now, the easy assumption here is that a lot of that money is going to go to the preps they signed in the second, third, fifth round with Coy James, Landon Harmon, Miguel Cime, Coy James. We still don't have official deals for all of those preps, who I assume are going to be big overslots. But between the Eli Willett signing at the first overall pick, and then the Nationals, I would say, used kind of a classic bonus pool era strategy. They took a lot of college seniors in their 6 to 10 round range. They have all those players signed. So between Eli Willett's and all of the seniors that the Nationals have signed, they've saved $4.1 million towards their total bonus pool. So basically how this works is the Nationals are taking a player that they view as a player who fits at the very top in Eli Willett's, probably the player of their final group who was willing to take the least amount of money. I imagine that it would have made them – they would have been interested in both Kate Anderson, Ethan Holliday, if they were into the same bonus. But just given where Eli Willett's realistic landing spot is, if he doesn't go one, probably makes more sense for Eli Willett to take 8.2. That is still more of a bonus than he would have been able to get for just a straight-up slot value at the fifth overall pick, which is where we were expecting him to go if he wasn't the first overall pick. So you can kind of see how it makes sense for Eli, how it makes sense for the Nationals. And I think a lot of times, too, in baseball's draft, it's not just a conversation of, do you want Eli Willett or do you want Ethan Holliday? Insert whatever your other option is. It's, is your class of Eli Willett plus all the other players you can sign later, given Eli Willett's bonus that he's willing to access, is that class of players more exciting to you? Is that a better draft haul to you versus your second option and whatever bonus he was going to take and the players that you're able to sign later? So it's very... all of it is kind of connected, and we're kind of seeing how the Nationals in particular have worked their draft. We can talk about the Angels as well. They've taken a slightly different strategy, which I think is kind of fun to look at. But yeah, starting with the top pick is the no-brainer here.
Carlos, when you were evaluating these players really in the top 10, did you feel like this was the correct direction for the Nationals to go? To me, from, you know, more of the fan perspective, let's say I'm a Nationals fan, I'm going, okay, they didn't feel like there was any superstar here that was worth that price that some number one picks go for. I'll use the Ethan Holliday example. Did the Nationals say, hey, we don't feel like paying an extra couple million bucks for this player is worth it? In baseball money, by the way, it's nothing. You do have a controlled amount here for the draft, so it does get intricate. That's what you're explaining. But I always play this game and just say, are you sure that you picked the best overall player in the draft? And if not, did you miss out on a superstar that you could have had with the very, very rare opportunity of having a number one pick. You go back to the Nationals history, it's easy to see the surefire Strasburg and Bryce Harper selections that they made. Mm-hmm. This didn't seem to be that case.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it makes a ton of sense strategically, just given the way the talent lined up this year. I mean, we talked throughout this draft cycle that I talked to scouts who've been doing this for 20 plus years, who said this is the most muddled and lack of separation at the top of a draft that he's ever covered. We have gone around this many, many times internally with BA. People prefer Eli Willett to Ethan Holliday. Some people prefer going with pitchers. So really, no matter who you talk to, I think you can get a different option as to who your number one pick would be if you're just going purely in terms of talent. If we all went around and said, hey, we're signing the first overall pick to a slot value deal, if you went around to our room at BA, I think you would get at least three different answers. So I think this strategically makes a lot of sense for the Nationals. And if I was taking a hitter first overall, Eli Willett would have been the hitter that I took first overall this year as well. So I do think that just looking at the way the talent is lined up this year, it makes a lot of sense to do it this way. I don't think it's a case where the Nationals are passing up a very clear, better talent to get a little cute with money. I think it makes sense.
You started on the Angels strategy. I'll swing it over to Ben. What do you think about what the Angels did with Bremner at two and then the rest of their plays?
Yeah, it's not what I would have done if I were in that spot. I would have taken Kate Anderson. I think he's just more advanced than Tyler Bremner. At least if you want to go for a college pitcher, you know, I don't expect them to take Ethan Holliday in that spot or Seth Hernandez from a high school side, but I get it. I think Tyler Bremner was somebody when people looked at the bigger picture, realized, okay, this was a guy who certainly fit into this tier of elite college pitchers coming into the year. It wasn't a great start, but it finished a lot better. The strikeout to walk was really good. The stuff is still really good. The control is really good. And if you compare him to Kate Anderson, hey, Kate Anderson has had a Tommy John surgery already. If you're concerned about durability risk with him and what that's going to look like 3-4 years down the road compared to Bremner, okay, maybe Bremner has a cleaner medical history. So I get it's not what I would have done, but I also don't think it's such an outlandish pick, maybe relative to where we had him ranked on our rankings, just because I think that group of, you know, whether it's him, Liam Doyle, Tyler Bremner, you know, you could throw Jamie Arnold into that mix as well. It's all pretty close, and you can get pretty you can make a defensible case for any of those college arms in any order.
The other thing I would note with that is, and by saving the money that they did, they really have spread it around. They went, Chase Shores got a lot of money, got $2 million plus as their second round pick. They added a pair of seven figure high school pitchers in Johnny Solinsky and CJ Gray. And then I think the key thing about this is, and we'll see how this works out, but 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th rounds, the Angels went above slot. You're only allowed to spend $150,000 on those players unless you have saved money in your top 10 rounds. They did. So all of those players got more than $150,000. What does that mean? That means that you're able to draft guys who are a tougher sign, who are a little bit more talented in most cases with those 11th through 15th round picks. So the Angels really did kind of spread this around. We updated our top 30 for all 30 teams today to add in the draftees. And one of the things that really does jump out about that is, you know, Carlos kind of looked at this too, like how many guys joined the Angels top 30 from this draft already, because there's a lot of guys who are become among the best prospects in the Angels system right away.
Okay. Let's move down the line here. Carlos, you want to hit on the Orioles class, which has been talked about quite a bit, and obviously all of the action that they had, and we can touch on the Braves as well.
Yeah, I think we just have to mention Baltimore just again because of how much pick capital and how much money they have. I mean, we're starting to see some of their signings, still waiting on Slater DeBrun, Colin Yeaman. I would expect they've got money to get this entire class signed, but I do think it's just worth looking at their class again and seeing. We talk about the additions we can make to the Angels farm system, and I think Baltimore was a farm system that had kind of started to fall off a little bit just with graduations, with some of the guys who aren't involved in that system anymore. And they've been so highly regarded for so long. They get a really phenomenal infusion of talent here. Ike Irish, Kaden Bodine, Vahiva Aloy, Slater DeBrun, who again is not signed yet, but I would expect him to sign. Joseph Jirwa. It's just a really impressive amount of talent that we're adding here for this Baltimore group. I'm not sure if guys like JJ and Ben are as high on this class as I am. But again, I don't know if we talked about it on Hot Sheet last week, but I do think that every single one of these players they got here with their first five picks were great values based on the Baseball America board, just based on the picks who were available at the time. So I think it's got to be exciting if you're a Baltimore fan and you're maybe a little bit worried about the talent falling off in your farm system. It's the most impressive infusion of talent we'll see in this year's draft.
I'm going to hold that Braves thought. Oh, go ahead, JJ. Last
I just want to interject on that also. We did again went for our updated top 30s. The other thing with the Orioles is two non-draft notes. Esteban Mejia was our number one prospect. Orioles pitcher is number one prospect in the Florida Complex League top 20 that we just dropped. And Nate George is now their number three prospect. So they have had some success in the lower levels of the minors as far as breakout prospects this year, too.
We'll get to the Braves and then a burning question that I'm excited to ask. I was asked it yesterday on a radio show and I'm like, I'll give you my take, but I'll get some much more advanced answers from our show today. Who has the best chance of making it to the majors this year and the percentage chance of it happening? So think about that. We'll step aside for a minute and then we'll answer it. You know about the best place to buy, sell, trade, or look for that special card in your world. It's called Arena Club, and Eric Kratz just went through a little slab pack experience, and you went big. You went for the Ruby Pack.
I love it. I love clicking on the Ruby Pack and knowing that I'm going to open something that is going to be epic. I got a Cal Ripken Jr. autographed 1 of 42. I'm keeping it right now, but I would love to have it in my hand, so I might even have them send it to me. Already graded. Everything taken care of for me.
That's right. You want to hang it up and stare at it all day, go for it. But if you're in there to get something else or to sell it away, you can do that. They've got the buyback program, or you can put it on the marketplace yourself. Tons of options. This is where the best cards live. It's arenaclub.com/foul, and use the code foul for 20% off your first slab pack, or if you'd like to purchase a card, 20% off your first card purchase. Again, arenaclub.com/FOUL. Use code FOUL.
Whenever we need to hire someone at Baseball America, we know who we need. Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Why do we use Indeed at Baseball America? Because it gets our position in front of qualified candidates. And it also allows us to do everything we need to make a hire, all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts. You only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In this minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now. And by doing so, you're supporting our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on our podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need. Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body truly is? It's true. Your biological age, the age of your cells and organs, is actually the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases like heart disease, cancer, dementia, and more. That's why learning your biological age can be truly life-changing, and that's exactly what the True Age Test from True Diagnostic helps you do. With just a simple at-home test, you can uncover your true biological age and get personalized insights into your true biological age and take control of your health like never before. No doctor's visits, no labs, just a quick finger prick from the comfort of your home. I recently ordered the test myself because I really wanted to get a clearer picture of my long-term health. It was eye-opening to learn that if your biological age is just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk for major diseases can go up by 30 to 50%. That's a huge wake-up call for me. But here's the good news, and this is the part that really inspired me. Up to 90% of biological aging is driven by lifestyle. That means the way we eat, move, sleep, and manage stress plays a massive role in how fast or slow our bodies age. True Diagnostic doesn't just tell you your biological age. It gives you a personalized report full of clear, science-backed steps you can take to actually slow down aging and improve your health over time. I'm really excited to see what our results will say and what I can do differently to better support my body as I age. It may be I'm adjusting my sleep. It may be changing supplements. It may be making smarter food choices or exercising more. It feels empowering to know that aging isn't just something that happens. It's something that we have control of. The test itself is super easy. Just a quick, painless finger prick. You send in your sample using a prepaid mailer, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you get a detailed online report with actionable insights that you can use. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code BASEBALL to get 20% off your entire order of subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use BASEBALL at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
Let's get to that big question first, JJ. Do you think that a player will make it up to the big leagues from this 2025 draft this year? And if not, like, I guess give me a percentage chance and a player.
I would say 15%, and I'll go with Chase Shores. We were just talking about him. But if the Angels are in it and they decide that they need bullpen help, he would be a guy who fits that. The tough thing you have about all this is a lot of these college pitchers, this is not a college hitter class where there's a college hitter you say, okay, he's going to leap straight to the big leagues, I would say. I don't think Arquette's going to do that. So if you take that out, the college pitchers are the most likely candidates. Most of these guys threw a lot of innings. Most of them are shut down now. And the shutdown plus ramp up to then throw very high intensity innings, especially if you're trying to reach the majors, is very difficult. Like, I look at that bin, and I'm not saying it's not possible, but it just seems like most teams nowadays kind of err on the side of caution with that, don't they?
Yeah, I think maybe we see some random-ish college reliever or later round college pick who could zoom to the big leagues this year who we're not expecting. But even if they, you know, if a guy pitches in the big leagues next year, that's still hitting the accelerator on their development. I could certainly see the Angels pushing Tyler Bremner. In fact, I would probably expect Tyler Bremner to pitch in the major leagues next year. I wouldn't necessarily expect that if he was in another organization, but we just see the Angels doing this year in, year out now with their top picks every year. And Tyler Bremner has been picked higher than anybody that they've picked in recent years. So I would expect Tyler Bremner to be in the major leagues at this time next year. But at by the end of this season, I don't think any out of these first round picks or guys we're expecting to be in the big leagues by the end of this year.
Yeah, I'll throw in one other Angels player who's a candidate, and then I can add a non-Angels player if we want to just diversify a little bit here. But Nate Sneed from Tennessee is also an Angels draftee, and he is maybe more suited to move into a reliever role quickly because that's where he's pitched in college for 3 years now, and he's got power stuff. He would fit along the lines of a lot of the relievers that the Angels have pitched or moved quickly, I should say. Another arm that I'm intrigued by, I don't necessarily think this is likely, but I think it would be interesting, is Malachi Witherspoon, who the Tigers drafted in the second round. His stuff fits in a bullpen right now. He's got some of the best pure arm talent in the class. The Tigers have been one of the better teams in baseball. I think they are the best team in baseball currently. But that would be fun. That's more like wishful thinking for me. Again, he has logged a lot of innings, which is something that JJ brought up. That would maybe be a reason not to do that with someone like Witherspoon, because I think he threw 70, 80 innings this year. He would have to work from a starter role into a reliever role to move quickly. But that's maybe another interesting one to throw out there.
And then let's get to the Braves. JJ, everyone in the top 10 rounds for Atlanta is already signed, including 5 position players. What do you have for us on ATL?
That key thing you said right there, including 5 position players. The Braves in the 2020s have been the organization that basically goes pitching, pitching, pitching every year. And they've done a good job with it. They've had a lot of those guys, starting with 2020 fifth rounder Spencer Strider, I think would be probably the most notable name to have there. But they've had a lot of these guys reach the majors. But they really, other than Drake Baldwin, who I believe third round pick a couple of years ago, they haven't really gone position player heavy at all, especially at the top of the draft. This year they did. They went shortstop, shortstop. Briggs McKenzie, the fourth round left-hander, did get the biggest bonus pool in this class, for the Braves. But this is a much more position player heavy class. I think that's kind of a realization that while they've understandably had this stretch of time where they really didn't have any openings because they've had so many of these players locked up long term, struggles this year. You know, some of these guys are struggling, Ozzy Albies, Michael Harris. I think that they are looking ahead and saying, okay, at some point before too long, we're going to have to bulk up the position players in this farm system. And this should do a lot of that because they went very position player heavy.
All right, last one here for this segment. Ben, take us through the 2026 class before we get out of here. I know we're super, super early, but that's next on the docket when it comes to draft talk. Here's the board.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this 2026 class, especially on the high school side. But you start at the top with Rock Chalowski, shortstop at UCLA. This is a guy who's a big-time prospect coming out of high school. I think he just wanted a ton of money to sign, and team said, all right, we'll see you in college. And he made the right decision because he looks like he's got a really strong chance to be the number one overall pick next year. It's really rare to find a college shortstop like this who projects to stick at the position, can hit with power, really good offensive track record, and a good defender at the position. And this high school class, I think the last two high school classes have been okay to below average in 2024. 2023 was a great class. I think this 2026 high school class is going to be just as good, or has a chance to be just as good as 2023, especially look at the top three shortstops in Grady Emerson, Jacob Lombard, Tyler Spangler, all guys have really good combination of tools, instincts, hitting ability, defensive skills too, really high chances to stick at shortstop for all three, especially with Emerson and Lombard. Kevin Roberts Jr. is, I mean, super young for the class, but he's like just an athletic freak, 6'5", maybe 225 pounds or so. A ton of tools. Brady Harris, another really tooled up outfielder who can hit with power, pitching prospects too. Guys like Trey Rangel from Texas, who's, you know, up to 96, 97, spinning, you know, 3,000 plus RPM, breaking ball. Savion Sims, who's like 6'8", throwing 100 miles an hour already with pretty good body control and even more physical projection still to come. So really high end prospects at the top for the high school side, and a lot of depth too. On the high school side as well. So I think the 2026 draft is going to be one of the best we've seen in the last few years.
Yeah, I may be more excited about this 2026 class than any class I've covered with Baseball America. The way scouts have talked about this class leading into this summer is unlike anything that I've heard before. And a lot of it is because of the high school class that Ben was just talking about briefly. I'll just point to our way too early mock that we have on the site right now for the 2026 class. A lot of these top players are in there. I think it's a fun exercise to do each year, but it has also been maybe better than you would think for identifying the top players in any given class a year out. I think those players tend to separate themselves very early on, but we're about to hit up the meat of the summer circuit here in the next few weeks. Can't wait to see these high school players. I do think there's a lot of talent in the college class. I have some more questions with some of the profiles that we have at the top of the class that maybe will be answered over the next year, but this is shaping up to be a really, really fun draft year for the 2026s.
Well, guys, great work over the past whatever amount of time, but especially the last couple weeks. Get some rest, and we'll look forward to articles on 2026. Ben and Carlos, thank you.
See you guys.
Thanks, guys.
See you soon. All right, JJ's coming back, so is Jeff Ponce. We're going to get into some current prospect talk, top 30s updated ahead of the trade deadline, and we'll answer a question or two next. Time for a quickie break. Todd Father and I are going to tell you about Huel, but it's mostly going to be Todd Father because I'm going to take a sip.
Well, we're talking about Huel, 27 vitamins and minerals. It's a complete meal. Let's listen. We all have busy schedules. As Scott's sipping it down, it looks delicious. It tastes delicious. When we're on the run, we need something to eat quick. And guess what? Huel is there. All different flavors. Scotty loves them. I love them. And I love how variety packed it is. And we can eat them any time of the day.
That's right. Yeah, check out the website. There's bars. There are so many different flavors. I love the Black Edition. Chocolate, 35 grams of protein. There's strawberry shortcake, coffee caramel, cookies and cream. I can go on and on. And you get yourself 15% off if you're a new customer using the code FOUL at Huel.com/FOUL. Please see our description for the terms and conditions. Skip the stress, not the nutrition. Try Huel today for complete nutrition with the code FOUL at Huel.com/foul. Hey, we're back. And so is Jeff Ponce with us. But before that, JJ, let's get to a question or two. You want to address a comment here?
Yeah, I saw the Vin Russo comment that said the Angels do not have a history of bringing up pitchers fast. And sorry, that's just not true. Brian Johnson, obviously, this year, who jumped, was the first guy from this last draft class to jump straight to the majors. Obviously, they sent him back down after that. They just haven't taken as many pitchers at the top. They've been moving guys like Nolan Shanuel, Christian Moore, Zach Neto, guys like that. But at the same time, before that, you got to look at Victor Medeiros. You got to look at Reed Detmers. You got to look at, there have been a number of guys. Sam Bachman moved pretty quick. Ben Joyce, obviously.
Chase Silseth.
Yes, Chase Silseth.
Oh, yeah.
They've had the Angels move their top guys just fast. It's just that's the reality of it. And again, I'm not saying it's worked out for them in some cases. In some cases, it hasn't, but they do move their guys fast.
Let's get right to prospects trade deadline wise. Let's hit that hard the next couple weeks. Jeff, prospects that could be blocked, prospects that could be moved. Any thoughts here?
Yeah, I think we talked about this early in the offseason with the Chicago Cubs. Late in the offseason with the Chicago Cubs. But I think you look at the Cubs right now, they have a bunch of prospects that have either touched the major leagues or have been in AAA for over a year now. Guys like Owen Casey, guys like Kevin Alcantara. Casey has been on an absolute burner really since the beginning of June. Alcantara has started to turn things around and I think would be attractive to teams because he's got, a high upside offensive profile with the ability to play, a plus center field, which is obviously going to be blocked for quite a long time. I would think in Wrigley with PCA and the way he's been playing. But even other pieces like, Jefferson Rojas, I think could potentially get dealt. A guy like Jonathan Long, who probably doesn't necessarily have an opportunity to play every single day and get at bats over Michael Bush or even guys like Moises Ballesteros, who's probably first in the pecking order in terms of the next DH, et cetera. I think you look at a guy like Long might be attractive to a lot of teams as like a second piece in a bigger deal. Cubs are a competitive team right now, tied for first place, I believe, right now in the NL Central with the Brewers. They could get aggressive, especially with, what they did this offseason with Kyle Tucker. We know they're willing to move big names and big name prospects. So I think the Cubs are the first one that I would call out. I don't know if, you, Scott, or JJ have another team in particular that you're kind of have your eye on as like there's some good, because I feel like all the teams that are in the mix right now, most of them have some interesting prospects at the top of their systems that could get moved. We could see a better trade deadline this year.
Whether it's at the deadline or this offseason, I feel like the Cubs are going to have to trade some of these guys because we're kind of getting the best used by, best traded by date, like when you buy your bread at the store. It kind of is one of those things where they're going to start growing stale because we know right now, you just said it, with PCA, we don't know if Kyle Tucker is going to be re-signed. He could, but even if he's not, we're probably looking at one position, one outfield spot. So you've got kind of this multi-headed monster all battling for one spot. And the Cubs have more than one guy at AAA who's been at AAA. Alcantara made it up to the big leagues, I believe, in 2023, if I remember off the top of my head. So they're going to probably be a team that has to move somebody or almost should move somebody at the deadline or at least in the offseason. Then you look at a team like the Yankees, and if I'm a Yankees fan and I'm looking at some kind of glaring holes that need to be filled, I don't know if they'll use the top of their prospect group, but we do have to bring up that if they are willing to move them, Spencer Jones has a whole lot more trade value, I would say, right now than he would have had coming into the season. Coming into the season, he was coming off of one of the a strikeout rate in a return to AA that just basically there's not a whole lot of success, examples of players who have that kind of strikeout rate and had success at the big league level. Right now, he got promoted to AAA, and he's had one of the best 15-game stretches you'll ever see in AAA. You don't want to go overboard on that, but it does absolutely mean that right here as we get to the trade deadline, whether that means that the Yankees look at him as late-season help for them or as a prospect who can get something big back in return, he absolutely has raised his stock and raised his value if teams are talking about him at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I think about the Orioles. I mean, whether it's Kobe Mayo or I know they weren't the most highly regarded, but they were good conversations about Connor Norby and Kyle Stowers and what they could do in the big leagues.
All-star Kyle Stowers.
Players. Kyle Stowers has been freaking awesome. He's a star this year for the Marlins. And now, I mean, we recently heard, at least according to Craig Mish, that they might hold on to him, which is great because they just got him. But that should tell you how eventually these guys need to do something, whether they need to play on the team they're on or move on. So on that topic, here's a guy that's been hurt a lot, but I think it's worth the question here from Patrick in the chat. Any chance a team tries to pry Jordan Lawler away from Arizona by the deadline? Jeff, what do you think? Because, or JJ, you can start because he raised his hand. I always go to the.
I want to jump on this real quick.
He's been mentioned here, JJ, as leaving and then Jordan filling in.
So the funny thing is it's amazing what the first weekend back from the, you know, from the All-Star break seems to do. Cause I feel like if the D-backs had been swept, we'd be saying, no, they're not trading Jordan Lawler. They're going to trade Suarez, but Suarez, who's hitting, I think he's had basically the best month of anyone in the big leagues from a power production standpoint. They sweep this weekend and maybe, I mean, I would say that if anything, the D-backs are probably more the team that's kind of halfway in, because if you trade Lawler right now is your logical third baseman for next year, because Suarez is a free agent, even if you keep him for now. So you do have an opening for him. But maybe the D-backs kind of go a little bit more of a half step where they don't fully sell all their guys who are free agents at the end of the year, because maybe they think they're still on the periphery here. I don't know what Jeff thinks.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I just don't know kind of where they're at in the race. The conversations we've heard around Suarez getting moved, I would tend to lean that Lawler probably is going to stick around. And they haven't moved him yet. I mean, they've been competitive at certain points over the last couple of years and have, you know, held on to him. Obviously, the injuries have, you know, kept him off the field, maybe held him back from ascending and graduating off of prospect lists, et cetera. But, you know, I do think that he's still in the plans there long term, and for just how the organization kind of operates and the conversations around Suarez, I would be shocked if Lawler ends up getting moved. But stranger things have happened too, so I guess never say never.
Good question. Keep them coming. Next week, we will definitely focus on prospects and the trade deadline coming up. And then, of course, by the time we get to the week after, we will know who got traded. How many top 100 prospects from BA's list were traded last year, JJ? Tough question. Zero. Let's try to get one.
That's under one and a half.
There. What do you got? Over, under one
I would
and
say
half.
We'll have at least one, maybe two or three this year.
Yeah, I'm going to take the over. I'm going to take the over on the one and a half.
JJ?
I'm going to take the over. I'm going to say three.
Three? Okay. I'm going to take the under. I'm going to go one. We'll see what happens. We'll talk next week. Great questions. Catch us every week on Hot Sheet Live, 3:30 Eastern, or on the pod. Subscribe to baseballamerica.com and to all of their great newsletters. See you soon.